Yeah. All right. Well, welcome back to the number 11 now, Weird for Good Hangout. And we're glad to have you joining us again this week. Is with me on the broadcast is Michael Wright, once again, the blog author of fatherofone.com. And I recommend you go check him out right now. And this week, and of course, my name is Aaron Nichols, and I write the blog weirdforgood.com. So if you've checked out any of these Hangouts before, we're glad you're back with us again this week. Welcome, Michael.
Yeah, good to be back with you, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. Glad to have you here. So this week I wrote a post. I intentionally gave you a title that I wanted to, you know, incite something in the readership out there or the Facebook world or whoever reads these blogs. Why I Miss My Debt. Darn that Dave Ramsey, you know. Believe me, I've heard lots of insults and things about Dave Ramsey, so I thought that might get some people to read this, and it had a little higher attendance than normal, so that was good. And I think that might have had something to do with it, why I miss my debt. So why would I miss my debt? If someone is watching this and hadn't read the blog, let's just give them a little bit of background. About just over 3 years ago, I paid off my last debt owed, which was the house that I live in that you can see in the video if you're watching this on YouTube. And that was the last debt I paid. And since then, I have not been to a bank to borrow money or used a credit card of any type. So I just pay for things as I go. And so I miss my debt really bad. And I explain that. In the blog. So, Michael, was that a surprise to you when I said I miss my debt?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, if you miss it so much, you can certainly have some of mine if it makes you feel better. But
yeah, good point.
Yeah, I was just thinking all that stuff behind you. So there's nobody, no other bank has any ownership on any of that. It's all yours.
Brother, that's got to be a good feeling. This furniture you see, this mansion. Actually, one of these days I'm going to write about that I live in a tiny house mega mansion. Do you know there's a movement called the tiny house movement?
I didn't know it was a movement, but I've seen the houses with wheels on them that you just pull around. Yeah.
Those guys, they're working with like 130 square feet, and tiny house is a big deal. You can go on YouTube and look it up. Well, mine's like 930 square feet, so that's a huge, mega tiny house mansion. Anyway, but it's paid for. Hey, you know what? It's paid for. It's got everything we need, and it's paid for.
Hey, I'm there with you.
So it is interesting to think about at this point in my life. As I go into in the blog, I'm bringing in a low amount of income for compared to what I did when I had debt. So when I had debt, I had a job that paid a nice salary for our, you know, area and for what I was doing. I'd worked there 10 years. And so now without debt, I'm making very little. Of course, it cost me very little to live as well. So my lifestyle hasn't had to shift that much, but there are certain things that we just don't do around here because of our low income. Like, we don't shop a lot for new clothes, or we don't go out and eat as much as maybe some people do. But overall, we pretty much do what we want and live the way we feel like living. We still save, we still tithe, and we just don't make much money. But why I say I miss my debt is because when you have a monthly bill coming in and you owe someone money, you get up and you go to work and you make those bucks. So if I go out and get stuff with debt and go buy it on a banknote, then I made a choice, and until that banknote's paid off, I've got to show up for work. Even if I don't like it, even if I wish I had a different job, even if I wish things were different, I got to go do that. So that was a real motivation for me back then when I had a lot of debt. And without it, it really changes the dynamic of my internal motivation. And so I'm just pointing out that I'm a weak person who has no real self-discipline, who has no, thing that says in the morning, I got to get up and I got to produce some money today. That's just not in me. at this point today. It may change, but have you seen that same thing, Michael, in that, you know, the structure of the way our, you know, thing, when we owe on stuff, that, that it sort of keeps you going. It's like it keeps you rolling along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember listening to a podcast from Kevin Miller, and he's got seven kids, a wife, seven kids. There's 9 mouths to feed. And I remember him saying, I was looking for kind of some motivation on becoming an entrepreneur. And I remember him saying that his seven kids and his wife were his motivation. He really didn't have a choice. He had to make things happen. And I thought, well, I don't think I need seven kids to make that happen. Maybe I can find some inspiration without that. But he made a good point that when you're under the gun and you have people depending on you, it does change the dynamics a bit. And but definitely. I mean, I have my wife doesn't work. My daughter, she's at home. She's got a long way to go until college and is on her own. So another, you know, 16, 18 years, I've got to be the provider for her, for three of us. And it does put the pressure on you. So, but you know, but then again, when you have you're just going to deliver. You're going to find a way to do it. To use Stephen Chandler's language, you are committed to providing for your family. You know, you're going to have food. It doesn't matter if I lost my job or not. We would have food. I would find a way to get food. So yeah, there's definitely motivation there, and it is, you know. But on the other hand, Aaron, I'm not motivated to have a Porsche. I'm not motivated to. So, you know, I see people that are motivated by that, and they do, they make it happen. They find a way to purchase those kind of things. So I guess it depends on what your motivation is and what's motivating you, and how you you know, how you get things rolling in your life.
Yeah, well, I mean, just hearing you, and I want to come back to something you said was about commitment, and I think you're right on with the commitments that you have made and that's in your world, and those commitments, you will do what it takes to make that happen. Of course, there's things that other people would be committed to that you're not committed to, hence the Porsche or, you know, maybe a villa off the coast of Spain or something, but... And if you get one, I'll come visit you. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's I just kind of took a different route with that over the last couple years, in that saying, okay, I will reduce my debt or eliminate it and basically drop those commitments. And we don't, Lindsay and I don't have a kid, so therefore, you know, Roxy the dog, she costs about $20 a month to feed, you know, and other than that, she goes around the neighborhood and eats other people's cat food or something, I think. So, but so you're right. I kind of went down this road for a while now of just saying no commitments. And there are some times that I think certain situations could leave you in the same place where you don't have commitments. Like, you know, say I happen to have a low lifestyle level, cost level, and I have a low income, so I have low commitments. If you happen to have a bunch of money in your career, way more than you needed, then maybe, you know, that same commitment level can shift. I think there's just a lot of ways that can be sort of, that can come about. But it's not too often that people find themselves in this space that I'm talking about, which is sort of this blue sky, the sort of like no structure, no commitment to mm-hmm. something I have to do today. I mean, I don't have to have a paycheck today. I don't have to have it this week. I wouldn't have to have it for the whole month. I mean, it would be better if we did, but, you know. So in that space, what do you do? And you find out what you're sort of made of in the fact that I found out that I didn't kick my own butt to make things happen when I didn't have to. So just interesting. I mean, this is something that I would have never expected my life to turn to look like this a few years ago, because it just, I think living in that world of debt, I thought that you just always had that inner drive and desire, but I sort of found out that for me, without that, I just sort of like float around sometimes and don't make things happen if I don't have to make things happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, that sounds awfully familiar to people I work with. I mean, they have house payments, they have car payments, children in school, but you know, they're kind of coasting like what you're describing. Sounds awful lot like them too. They have commitments as far as bills to pay, but they're not really passionate about anything. I mean, no, I really can't. I don't know everything about their personal life. Maybe they enjoy some kind of hobby or sports or church life. But I mean, as far as work goes, they're just there. I mean, they're just a warm body, it seems, sometimes just taking up space. And I really can be talking about myself on certain days, to be honest with you. So, but there's no drive there either, Aaron. And they've got commitments, and there's no drive. So, if you don't have no drive, it'd be better not to have any bills and not have any drive than have a bunch of bills and have no drive.
Yeah, so you could see that sort of, or I think what you're saying is, even in the situation where you're kind of doing the quote-unquote normal life with the payments and a job and all that stuff, you can still find yourself not really pushing beyond the limits. Not really pushing your capabilities to a further level. You're just sort of cruising and just sort of coasting. And
Yeah. I mean, as far as financially, I've always tried to imagine, okay, what would happen if I lost my job? Financially, are we ready? Are we prepared? And I always come to the conclusion, I'm never as ready as I want to be. But still, that drive doesn't kick in to say, okay, let's pretend my salary is half of what it is, and let's live off that. I don't do it. I mean, I can save a little bit more, but it's hard for me to put myself in that position unless I'm put in that position. I don't know how to explain it. It's like going back to last week's podcast. It's like the hero's journey. It's that initiation period. You're kind of thrown out there, and sometimes tragedy has to strike. Until you become passionate and committed. Because trust me, if I didn't have a job, I told my wife, I said, if I ever lost my job, you would know it, because I wouldn't be home. I wouldn't come back home until I found one. So
I would have a job. Michael's been gone a couple of days. So.
Yeah, I know. It sounds easier than it is. But yeah.
Well, on that note, you know, I do have just personal experience with something like that, where I now live on so much less than I used to. I mean, so much less. And if you'd have asked me back then, you know, making X number of dollars to live on a fifth of that or less, I'd have told you were crazy, you know. It's not possible. But it's just funny. Like you said, when you have to, then you can. So that leads us, that's our segue into another point I bring up in the writing about a message that Steve Chandler, that we both know, puts out there that says willpower. Okay, so we're kind of talking about willpower here, right? Like discipline and willpower, and if we had to, could we do something? And I could say I'm not born with the willpower gene, so that means that I needed the debt to pressure me into something, or I needed a lack of income to pressure me into learning how to live on less. But his message is that willpower is just like arm power, that some people maybe are born with a little more than other people are, but everyone can develop their arm power, and everyone can develop their willpower. So I'm sure that you have examples of that in your life. I just know you do, because I know you very well. And I know I do too. In certain areas, we have undertaken a mission to gain willpower around eating better or exercising or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I read your blog, I kind of wrote a note. It kind of, the most latest thing that's happened to me was this willpower. Now, our motivation to do something. Okay, so part of who I am and who I think I want to move towards is someone that impacts boys and men, you know, in a positive way, that just need that, you know, and that's starting through mentor program and through church. So every Sunday night I go to, at first I kind of got somebody from church said, why don't you come, you know, volunteer at church, you know, you can do some music stuff. And I didn't really want to do that exactly. And I thought, well, I'll just take the easy route. I'll just be a little kind of just there to watch the kids, small group kind of leader person. Didn't really know what I was doing. Wasn't exactly comfortable, and it wasn't exactly, I don't know, it I didn't feel like it was exactly where I needed to be, but I kept going every Sunday. Okay, and they would say, okay, the thing is you've got to come. They didn't say you had to come, but if you come every Sunday, you build trust with these kids. They get to know you. You know them by name. It wasn't exactly exciting at first, Aaron. It wasn't, and this was probably going back about 10 months ago when I started. And I started with some little kids, and they said, well, they need some kids in the second graders. And my daughter's in second grade, so I'm like, well, okay, I kind of understand these kids and where they're at because I've got a daughter that's in second grade. And they're just wild. They're just crazy. I mean, they're all over the place. And I'm like, sure we're at church? This is like a zoo. And it's like almost had to – it wasn't like I had to force myself to go every Sunday, but it was like I didn't exactly look forward to it for a while. And then – over the past, I don't know, couple of months, it's just now I have this, because I've gotten to know them, I've gotten to know their a little bit about their family situation. I mean, just, you know, getting to know a little bit about their story just in the second grade, it's more like that passion, that fire has come alive. I don't want to not be there now because I don't want to miss out on them seeing me and saying, oh, it's Mr. Michael, he's here, we can rely on him to be here. So that's the most recent thing. It's kind of like, I guess it was like flexing my muscle when I didn't really want to, you can call it the gym, I didn't really want to be at the gym doing bicep curls, but I had my inner drive, my willpower was like, well, it's only once a week, it's only an hour a week, you can do this. And I kept going, and then last week, one of the little second graders, it was Easter, so 2 weeks ago, she's like, you know, I led her through a prayer, and she's like, want to let Jesus in her heart, and like she trusted me, I guess, and you know, and they seem excited to be there at church. So, you know, that's just one example. Yeah, that most recent example I can think of. You gotta show a little discipline and just show up, and then that passion will, you know, if you do it for 5 years and there's still no passion, I say go do something else. But I mean, if that
well, I just love that story, Michael. I mean, I have a similar just, you know, almost exact experience. We have an after school program at our church. It's called Logos, and the kids come, and you know, it's the same way where, you know, in the beginning, what I think what we're saying is, in the beginning, your muscle is weak for that activity. In the beginning, you're just not strong with that activity.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of painful in a way.
Yeah.
Because you haven't built that up. You haven't exercised that thing.
Yeah, it's awkward, and I was telling myself, and you're probably thinking the same thing. This probably isn't where I need to be. I probably need to be doing something else. You know?
Well, and you know, I probably had that thought in there, but we have the same. I'm sure someone from my church will watch this and cringe when I say, yeah, we had the same wild Indian children at our church too.
Yeah,
you know,
and I mean, it's like they're kids. That's what they do. I mean,
yeah. So the thing is, for me, it was like, not that I don't need to be here, but someone needs to be here, and I'm available, and so yes, this is an important thing, but it took some time to build that comfort with it, and to know that you can do it. Because in the beginning, when you haven't exercised something, it's not gonna feel right. And I think we're all trying to find our calling and our passion, and there's so much in our cultural consciousness right now about, you know, find your bliss and that kind of stuff, and we've talked about that here too. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that it's always going to be instantaneous. like just a pure, you know, shift of a gear and now it's going to be perfect for you. Like I think Steve Chandler's saying too, you've got to work that muscle sometimes. You got to say, I see this thing out in front of me. I'm willing to try it during the time that it's not easy and that I haven't built that muscle yet. And but once you do, then the momentum of that exercise just keeps you coming back for more.
So, yeah.
So here you're talking about a community service thing and a church service thing, and I'm talking about that too. Is it possible to use that same framework in the world of making money and being of service to someone for a, you know, in exchange for their investment?
Yeah, I think something that serves anybody well is to think about what do you want. I mean, even Jesus would ask people that. The guy sitting by the pool is like, what do you want? You know, what do you want me to do? I mean, they wanted to be healed, but he wanted them to say it. So I think sometimes we need to say what, you know, ask ourselves, what do we really want? And if we want the mansion on the hill, then by golly, that's what we want. So there must be a reason for that. And whether you think it's good or bad or whatever, I think you should at least write it down. And then and I think that once you're going towards something, and it might be a lifestyle like you have, Aaron, you know, no bills, freedom to kind of choose what you want to do. That's a vision. That's a goal that you had. And I think that's what would help a lot of people, including myself, is to figure out what it is you really want. I probably should refine that myself, financially even, because I'm not really exactly sure what that number is or what are things I do want. I think once you know where you want to go, that builds, that at least strikes a match to the fire, get something started there.
Well, you're right on, brother. I'm going to kind of share some stuff here with you. The last thing that I talked about in my post was about just what you're saying. It's time to practice getting really clear on what I really, 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 absolutely really want, you know? What is it that I want so bad that I don't need the structure of monthly bills to make me show up for it? What is it that I want so bad that no one can stop me? You know, what is it that I want so bad that I just wake up thinking about it and all that? You know, I think some people are lucky enough to know that when they're young. Whether it's, you know, a musician that you hear later on in their life, they just said, I just always wanted to play the drums. And so they became the drummer for, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers or whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't think most of us know that, and I don't either. But I will say, along the question of how do I ask myself this, I did an exercise last night based on something that Steve Chandler's talked about, and it just sort of happened on the fly, but I went on a walk with my dog, and it was about, I don't know, a 3-mile walk or something, and I just talked out loud to myself, and I asked myself questions like, what motivates me? And I went into different categories, and I talked about what motivates me to want to be a coach. What motivates me to want to write this blog? What motivates me to want to show up for church every week? What motivates me, to want to be a good husband to my wife? So I just went through some things, but what's funny is when you ask yourself these questions, you get answers that you didn't always expect to get from yourself. Really weird, but you kind of split off in your mind. Your mind can separate a little bit, and you can stand apart from yourself and say, here's what motivates you, Aaron. And then you get a list of answers. And so then you can take those answers and ask about them as well and kind of dig a little deeper and dig a little deeper. So I'll just say that I recommend this for anybody. There's something important about the walking part is that your physical body moving keeps part of your brain busy. So it's not like trying to overthink what you're trying to do. It's not going to try to overanalyze it. You're going to be able to let your right brain be more open and free. But I came to some really interesting conclusions. If we have time, we may share them here about this conversation. and about my quote-unquote brokenness or lack of income over the last couple of years. So you're really hitting on something big here this week, Michael, that getting clear on what we really want and what does motivate us is something that, for me, has created a huge shift just 24 hours ago in my life. And it was based on, you know, writing this blog and then wanting to come on this hangout and be able to talk about what I had written and that sort of thing. But
we should make these walking hangouts somehow, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
So we get better ideas talking while we're doing them at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You guys could see a little bit of Princeton, Kansas, rail trail, the rails to trails, which is where I walked with the dog, and you could see her chasing rabbits all over the place. That might be kind of fun. So anyway, this is a biggie. You know, I think when I'm talking about life feeling like a wide open blue sky and I don't really know what direction to go sometimes, I don't know that that's just me. I think that might be part of the human condition.
Yeah, yeah. I was, before our hangout, I was telling you that, and 3-4 hours ago, I got an email from a Gabe Lyons who kind of does some leadership stuff. His wife, he sent an email like, please check out a book with these freebies. She wrote her first book about, basically the premise was she was having severe depression and anxiety because she couldn't find her calling. And so she wrote this book. I guess today it's coming out. It's called Free Fall to Fly, and it's Rebecca Lyons. But
awesome.
But it appears to be a book by a woman for women. I'm sure a man could read it too. But about I guess her life, kind of struggling as a woman, trying to figure it out. You know, figure out what her calling is, what her passion is in life. So, I mean, to your point, there's books all the time coming out about that kind of stuff. It's like everybody is hungry for that. You know, you would think with all this technology and, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all this kind of left brain kind of techno things that, but we're not robots. We're meant for. That stuff can only take you so far, and then your soul has to be replenished, and you got to have a reason to live, and you got to have a reason. And so, yeah, we need to read and absorb and find out what motivates us. I wrote it down. What motivates me? I'll be thinking about that today because, as I told you earlier, I have a little time tonight to do things like that. So, I think that's great. Great advice, Aaron.
Well, I'm just gonna go a little further with that because this could be helpful. I've shared this a couple times even since last night, and it seemed to have an impact on those I shared it with. So, one of the things that is significant about motivation during this conversation with myself is that I seemed to come to the conclusion that I was motivated by things that were easy. Like, if you already know what you're supposed to do and how to do it, then I'm more motivated to do that than it is to try, something that I have some fear around because I don't know how it's going to work. I'm motivated by things that, well, I guess it was kind of around this easiness thing. So I sort of felt lazy, like I'm motivated in a lazy way, like as long as I don't have to work too hard, I'll do it type of thing. Mm-hmm. But then that was really balanced out by this lifestyle change of going to sobriety versus basically being a party animal, alcoholic, whatever you want to call it, you know, all the time. So, like, that doesn't seem easy, you know. And I just crossed an anniversary of 18 months with that. So, what was it about that change and significant shift that was motivating to me? Okay, so I can kind of dissect for myself that was something that I had seen some people that I respected, Dave Ramsey, Wayne Dyer, Steve Chandler, have all talked about sobriety was one of their main things they were proud of in their whole lives, and I really respect these guys. They're teachers, authors, significant, you know, inspirational individuals. And it was something that I could try, like, in little bites. So, like, I could try it for a day, or I could say, just today, I'm not going to drink. So it seemed kind of doable on a today level, like not like I've never said I quit for my whole life because I don't have my whole life right now. But so I just kind of was looking at these two things. Is it the laziness? I'm only motivated by things that are easy, or is it motivated by something that actually does feel better to me in my mind and I can sort of test it out and see? So what happens is I test out sobriety. From a sober viewpoint, being among drunk people, you can really get a glimpse of what I used to look like or what I used to act like or sound like, okay, in the moments of drinking, right? Mm-hmm. From a sober perspective, it's not nearly as attractive to be drunk.
No.
Okay. As it is when you're drunk. So if you're drunk and you're amongst your friends and you're all hanging out and having a good time, you had a long week at work and you want to drink, it's pretty awesome to be drunk. You know, like it's fun for a while till the morning and your head hurts and you're all alone and you wonder what you did last night and how you got home and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. Been there, done that. So when you're so close to something like that, it feels awesome. But when you get separated from it and look back, you can say, oh man, you know, that was kind of a waste of time. It's actually kind of childish looking to me now. And I see that it's not really accomplishing something on a bigger scale that I would like to accomplish. Now, here's where I'm going to be super honest with people that are here, and I've never not been honest with my readers. So the thing about my brokenness over the last couple years and not bringing in a lot of money is like that's a choice. You talk to any of these people, they're going to say, I've chosen that. Even you said it's been a vision of mine to have this sort of freedom. And, you know, I could say it nicely, like, you know, I'm carrying a light load and all this stuff. I came to the conclusion through the self-coaching exercise that you can do, and I explained earlier, that being drunk and being broke have a lot of the same aspects. Okay, it seems kind of awesome sometimes to me to see how little we make and how we make it by every month and how we do what we want to do. Like it's sort of this weird game. It's like a weird game of like we don't need much to survive and most people aren't doing this and it seems kind of strange and out there. And I sort of have this addictive personality that sort of like, you know, appreciates this weird thing called, you know, living this low-level lifestyle and making it, okay? Through this self-coaching exercise, I could see. Now, what if it was the opposite? Going from drunk party animal alcoholic to sober. What if I do the same thing with wealth? So instead of being on the low end of wealth, what if I was on the high end, okay? What if I made a good amount of money helping people and serving people in an important way, helping them grow their business or helping them do things they've never done, and I made a good income. From that place, how silly would this look to me to live this sort of like brokeaholic, which I'm coining that term here, and I may write a book about that, but this brokeaholic lifestyle, like that would look kind of silly. It's like, we all have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I spend a lot of times not creating service or money or something useful.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was doing when I was being an alcoholic as well. I was doing things that were only basically serving me. They weren't serving anybody else. They weren't useful. They didn't make – and I'm not talking about a money-focused thing, so I hope I'm explaining myself well, but it's sort of like this is sort of silly to be this broke and have the abilities and talents and things that I do have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so from this other perspective, it's like, okay, if I've made one shift before, going from drinking all the time to sobriety, I'm about to embark on a new shift as well, going from this brokeaholic lifestyle and just not choosing that anymore, just not choosing to spend my time doing things that aren't useful to someone else in a way that they would want to invest in the work or, you know, that's not producing something useful for our family. And anyway, this kind of stuff is really foundational, and I just encourage people to try this kind of self-coaching method because, man, my mind was blown when I realized that I just shifted my drunken alcoholicness to like this drunken brokenness, and it seems so obviously silly to me right now. And I may have just blown Michael's mind with this or bored him to death, one of the two.
No, I was thinking what you're saying. It's easy to justify a certain way of living, you know. But, you know, if you were starting to hang around with millionaires, you might begin to see how they live. Or if you found someone that was truly wealthy and had money, and you're able to see the things that they were able to do with their money and the value that they brought to people, I think that would, you know, you would want to become more like that person. Yeah, I was thinking of a Jim Rohn quote or something he said about you only make as much as the value you bring to others. So if you're bringing, if you want to have wealth, then you've got to bring this level of value. I'm not quoting him correctly, but value of service. You've got to bring that something of value to others. If you don't bring something of value, then why would someone exchange money for something that has no value? So, so I think that's so. Making the money is just a byproduct of all that. So it just happens. Easier said than done. I mean, we're all human, and but I think when you focus, and I think that's your goal, you know, and what you're about is to help others, and you've helped me. That the money will, it's just kind of like a byproduct, and as your service level of service increases, then the other stuff just comes, and you know, and then you're able to do stuff with that money. So, I mean, to be frank, I mean, you don't have a lot of money. So you can't really do a lot for others with money. If you see somebody that's a relative that has lost their job, you can't give them a interest-free loan or a gift of you know, to help them through. I'm not in that position either, Aaron. So I'm just saying, that's where I want to be. I want to be able to help people with money. I don't really care. My house is perfect for us. It's perfect for three people. It wouldn't be perfect for five people. There's no reason to get a house for five people. I just don't want that. My wife doesn't want that. But I want to have money to give to people, to give to things I believe in. And that's where I want to be. I'm getting a vision here. Man, I'm getting what motivates me. That's what motivates me right there, is helping others. And I think a lot of that you're the same way. And I think most people want to help others.
This is so cool. You know, it's right along the wavelength. I think we're on the same wavelength with this. And so one of the big messages I got on the last hungover morning that I've had in my life, the last one, which was October 1st, you know, of whatever, 2011, is that right? 2012? Yeah, 2011. So the message was, God can only use me if I'm sober, okay? And the message had no judgment in it. The message wasn't, you're a bad person if you drink. The message wasn't, all drunks are bad people. Nothing along those lines, okay? And I'm not trying to say any of that about anyone else who is drinking. Just to me, that message was huge. So just like what you said, God can't use me if I'm broke, okay? Or he can only use me to a certain extent if I'm broke.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't spread my, you know, I can't share something in a way that is instantaneous and useful across the country. You know, I can show up for church in the afternoon to help with logos, but what if I wanted to help start a church in, you know, another country? Well, you know, we've only got so much we can share because of the level that we've created. So,
yeah, I know in your blog you mentioned that you tithe, you save. I mean, I think that's powerful in and of itself because, you know, if you're already you know, if you're making low levels of income and you're giving and you're tithing, that's, man, that just shows to the eternal God that you're capable of managing a little bit of money. So he's, you know, it only goes up from there. I think that makes you capable of earning more money, because he knows you're going to give. If you're going to give out of a little, then you'll give out of a lot. So I think that's a good sign for you, Aaron.
Well, and it's I did want to post that just so that people know that it's not only people who make a certain amount can give their, you know, 10% or whatever they choose, you know, their version of a tithe. But so this is big stuff. You know, this is like, if I can see, and this is a perception shift for me, if I can see that spending a day not serving people in a way that is useful enough that they will want to invest something, whether it's, you know, whether it's I'm writing a book, so they'll want to read the book and they'll invest for a cost of a book, or whether it's a coaching session or whatever project, you know, that I'm creatively making in my life. But if I'm just kind of hanging out watching YouTube videos, then that's sort of along the same lines of just chilling at the bar. I might as well, you know, go belly up and just hang out for a while, because I'm really not accomplishing much. I'm making myself feel kind of good in the process, but I'm not really adding that much to the world around me. And I love everyone that comes to our bar, the Brandon Iron Bar and Grill, and hangs out and drinks, and they have a social life. And we're in different places in our evolution, and there's some people who don't have a problem with it, as I did. So, mm-hmm. Anyway, if there's judgment around it, it will never be something attractive to people. But if I can just say, hey, there's no judgment. I was that way, and now I'm this way. And, you know, if I can do it, I guarantee anybody else can.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody has their own path. And I think there's certain ways, someone who just decides that today is the day I'm going to get in better shape, or today's the day I'm going to pay off my debt. Who knows what sparks that? But I mean, I know you don't go around saying, oh, you got debt, I don't. You know, it's not like that. You know, it's just everybody has their own timing, and it's everybody's in a different place. And, So I know you're ready for those who are ready to change. So,
man, I'll tell you this: it invigorates me, it excites me. I love having conversations like this with you, Michael. I had one earlier today with a former client, and you know, we were there to talk about something else, but you just can't not fall into the mode of the realm of possibility. Possibility is so delicious that you end up there every time you talk with somebody who's got this sort of streak in them that, you know, that they see beyond the container of their normal life. And so that stuff, I love it, and I'll keep doing these hangouts and things until I wear that out. I doubt that will be anytime soon. So,
no, like we said earlier, everybody needs that, and I need it, and I get some energy when, honestly, I was on the phone all day today, it seemed like, and I was thinking, I'm going to get on another call, but this call is so much different than those other calls, Aaron. This one pumps me up, and the other ones, they can be a little draining sometimes, but I think it's the motivation behind it, and I appreciate you hosting these.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you showing up for them. And on that high positive note, before I give you a chance to say anything else, we will cut it off for this week and come back again. And we'll have some different times for those that may be interested in being with me. You know how to find that out. But for those that are joining us on YouTube and the podcast, we thank you. Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate you, man. You rock.
Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. Good to be here.
All right. Thanks, guys. We will end this week's show. So thanks for being here.